You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, number 713, and it's a freestyle episode this week. And this is features editor John Gentile, and I'm here with co-head editor Emmore. What's going on?
Hello. Yeah, there's lots of cool stuff going on. I realized that I was invited to be a collaborator on the best of post on Punk News, and I thought I accepted it, but it turns out I didn't. So I did that earlier today. Woo! So that was good. The lists are
Am
good.
I?
I like the lists.
Well, there you go. Am I just saw Lars Fredriksson is auctioning off records on his Facebook. Maybe his Instagram too.
Oh.
Let's take a quick look. So I always find that weird when,
Interesting.
like, what's your opinion of that? Like when famous people or at least in the punk world auction off their own stuff directly. Is that a cool way to give cool stuff for the fans, or is that kind of milking it and undignified?
If it's like something, and I know this was a different case, but if it's something kind of like the Steve Albini thing, it's like, I think that's cool and that's a good way to do it. I think with stuff like this, where it's just kind of like random and sort of dropped in, it's kind of like, are you okay? You know, like, do you need help with something? Are you doing this because it's cool, or are you doing it because it's ne necessary? You know?
Well, Lars Fredriksson is auctioning his golden copy of Life on Gold, see-through yellow, really yellow vinyl of Life on Wait, and people are bizarre. Some people like put $100 or whatever. One guy, it looks like the top right now is $150. But I put $75, and I'm in the Bay Area. I just DM'd you. I'll pick it up personally. Like you really
What?
think? Really think like Lars Fredriksson go, yeah, come on over, hang out. Like, you really think that's going to happen? Like, you do wonder. People are kind of goofy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's no real line, you know, there's no real kind of boundary.
But like, do you think this guy that put that actually thinks Lars will be like, yeah, man, come over and hang out with me? Like, does he think that's going to happen, or like, what's the purpose of that post?
I think I hope I get to meet him and I get to say hi and maybe shake his hand.
So you think he thinks Lars actually would be like, yes, come to my house and pick up the record.
Yeah, or like, we'll meet at like this place and I'll give you the record. And then that guy gets a cool story, says he's met Lars in person, has met Lars in person, and then I think that's his thought process.
So he genuinely doesn't think that that's a bizarre request.
I think he
And is
knows
it a bizarre request? Is it a
I
bizarre? I mean, it is punk rock. In punk rock, there's supposed to be no separation between the artist and the audience, although that really is not true in any context. You know, like we like in punk rock, they you know we like to say, oh, you know, the audience. There's no separation between the audience and the artist. It's all the same thing. That's actually not true. You know what I
No.
mean?
In
But
certain cases, yeah, I think it is. Like, you know, if you go and see a local show, you can hang out with the band, talk to them at the merch table, like stuff like that. I think in that case, definitely. But most, like, kind of larger bands, no.
I would agree with you, but even then I would disagree with you because in that
Ooh,
scenario,
okay.
multiple people are going to see one group of people or three groups of people or whatever. You know what I mean? So even then,
Oh, fair
there's not a
enough.
true equality. There is still a power dynamic there, you know? And so I know it's a neat idea in punk rock that the audience and the band, and there's no barrier, but that's actually not true. The barrier is much lower than in other genres and atmospheres, but you still have to learn how to play an instrument. You still have to like just being an audience member at shows will not give you the same, would not give you the same, which is what I'm looking for, reward and sense of achievement and attention that being the band will. So I would say that's not a true, even though we like to pretend it's a true statement, it isn't really, you know.
Yeah,
So
people can always surprise you.
back to our Lars thing is, so you think this guy, do you th this guy that's saying Lars, I'll come pick up the record from you in person, do you think he thinks that could actually happen?
Yeah, I think he thinks it could happen. I don't think he thinks there's a high chance of it happening, but I think it's like, I gotta shoot my shot because if I don't, then like, why not?
I think he does think it will happen, and I think he's kind of a dim person, frankly. Like, not to be a jerk, but anymore, I'm noticing more and more people like this person. It just like I wonder how certain people function in life. They seem always confused, and they seem to request or have an idea that something bizarre is likely to happen when it is not. But anyway, we're getting off track and we're getting abstract. In other news, Punk News Summer Soiree 9 is now bolted. It's 90% bolted down, but all the important things are bolted down. I'll give the date. The date is going to be August 1st in Philadelphia. So, and it's going to be especially rad. We've got a very special thing for this time. I mean, this, I'm going to pat myself on the back. The soirees have just overall, knock on wood, have been friggin' awesome. The first one, of course, World Inferno, their first Philly show in a long time. The second one was Sturgeon backed by Crazy in the Brains, which was crazy. The third one, which was World Inferno and Joe Jack Talcum, well, really Dan Joe Maar doing a Dead Milkmen set. Fourth one was Coven. Fifth one was Marissa and Dan Joe Maar. Sixth one was that amazing dwarf show with Zorn and Danbert of Chumbawamba. Seventh one was Dan Joe Maar doing all Ramones. And eighth one, of course, was Dwarfs and Schooly D. So every summer soiree really has been kind of something special. And I've got something pretty special. And I always say, how can I top myself? And I don't know if I'm at the point where I can top myself anymore. I mean, like, you can always top yourself, but it's difficult. But I think we've got a pretty sweet thing on the horizon. And you can tell me if this will top number eight, or which I think was maybe the best one yet, you know. So anyways, so yeah, that's what's
Very exciting.
happening. Oh, here's what's happening in the Punk News universe. February 28th, Philly Record Freakout at Philomoka. And then on, we just figured this out sometime in May. There's going to be the one in the Chaminade Creek Brewing again. Give me one second here. I haven't even announced it. I'm going to work on that tonight. Let's
Ooh.
see here. The Neshaminy Creek one is going to be May 17th. So we've got that coming up. And then we've got Summer Soiree on August 1. A lot of stuff happening at Punk News, brah.
Rah.
Okay. And I think that's all the small matters to handle. Let's jump on to some news. Bandcamp has banned AI-generated music on Bandcamp. They put out they put out a medium-length message. This has happened to me with Bandcamp, and basically it says, from now on, you're not allowed to put up any music that is generated wholly or in substantial part by AI, and you're not allowed to use AI to impress and to impersonate other artists or styles even. It's up to them to determine whether or not they think you are or are not AI. And so that's the new policy. From what I saw, is most people are into that idea. But Em, where do you stand? What's your perspective on this?
I think this is a good idea. I think the statement is like the statement's short, but I think the statement's well written as a whole. Like again, they're really pushing the fact like with the line like the fact that Bandcamp is home to such a vibrant community of real people making incredible music is something we want to protect and maintain. So, you know, they're really coming out with the kind of human versus machine language and really pushing the yeah, we're on your side. We're here to help. We're here to make sure that your art doesn't get co-opted or you know, whatever. Spotify has a problem with, well, has many problems, but it has a real issue with AI generated bands and music where they will put it into playlists. They will make these things kind of trend. And in certain cases, they will even kind of replace an existing band with an imposter. So that happened with King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, who removed their catalog from Spotify in 2025. And they were replaced by an AI version of themselves, basically, which is wild. So we're getting into a weird place with it where when we've talked about it on the podcast lots, like the effect of AI on art and in that kind of frame on music and obviously on the world as a whole. So I think when we're getting to a point where we can't trust anything, this is really, 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 really important, to know that things will be investigated, things will be looked into. AI music is right now, for the most part, pretty easy to spot. And like with listening and stuff, where it gets really tricky is a lot of the playlists are that have AI music most often are the like lo-fi chill like study beats kind of thing. There are obviously real artists who make that music and put it out there and don't use AI, but that's typically where a lot of the AI tracks kind of insert themselves. They can insert themselves anywhere, but that's one of them because sometimes it can be a little bit more difficult to tell than with a straightforward rock song. So I think this is great. I think more places should be doing this and should be putting in an active effort. That's the other thing. I hope this is an active effort and it's not just this is what we're doing and we say we're doing it, but we don't end up doing it. Because again, it's absolutely ridiculous. Like people are having their stuff just kind of taken and put in and whatever. So yeah, that's my thought on it. John, what's your Bandcamp Bannon AI music take?
I'm all for it. I'm against AI music and I'm against AI art in general. I think it's a good idea, but I support Bandcamp 100%. I think it's a great idea. Also, I really support that you can't impersonate other artists. And really, I think there need to be
Yeah.
laws passed that says you can't impersonate people with AI, and you can't impersonate actors and make actors' voices sound. And actually, there are some laws already that existed before AI that you can't. There's actually a famous trademark lawsuit with regard to Dolly Parton, and there's another one with Vanna White, where they had vocalists sound like Dolly Parton, but it wasn't Dolly Parton. And even though she didn't sing a Dolly Parton song, the ad kind of suggests that it was Dolly Parton, so Dolly sued and won. So there already is
Oh.
some, not statutory, like there might be statutory laws in some places, but there's case law that you can't impersonate someone. And so I think those kind of laws need to be passed. But here's the thing, and I don't know if anybody's got the answer. AI is, if you recall, I mean, a year and a half ago, it was so easy to spot AI art because the people had seven fingers.
Yes.
You
Yeah.
don't see that, you don't see that anymore. AI is advancing so rapidly that, I mean, I've seen video that looks real, and if you really look at it, you can usually see. But maybe there's some of it so good that you don't know, And at any rate, within a year, I would say AI will be able to make video and songs that are indifferentiable. From unable to be differentiated from real video or real audio,
Yeah.
and even though we're all against it, well, first of all, well, not everyone's against it. Some people love AI and some people argue on behalf of AI, but it's a force that you can't stop. We can't just say, okay, no one use AI anymore, or no one use AI art. That's just not going to happen. Russia and China or whomever, North Korea, are going to make fake AI stuff to cause chaos over here, just like they did in the last US election, in the election before that. Also, there's people in USA that like AI. Giant businesses love AI because it saves them lots of money, even though it re results in shittier products. I mean, I don't know about half, but one tenth or so of the call centers that you call now, it's a quote AI assistant, and it has no idea what it's doing. Or AI systems are determining people's medical coverage, So the AI is a force that can't be stopped. Even if we as Americans don't want it, other countries aren't going to go along with it. So it literally cannot be stopped. So what do we do with that, Em? What do we do with that? I don't know if anybody's got the answer. It's scary times.
It needs to be regulated, and it needs to be regulated before it kind of gets into everything. But I think that time's passed. It's literally everywhere. Like, you can't use like Google without it using AI. You can't use like Gmail without it using AI. Like all these things where it's like you can't opt out of, and it's like I don't want this. I don't want this to be a part of my like my personal life, my work life, whatever. Like I don't want it going through my shit. I want to be able to turn it off. I want to be able to opt out of it. And even with regulation, it's also like, well, how do you regulate it and how do you regulate it well? I know a lot of places, like Instagram does this, Pinterest does this. They obviously miss some stuff because so much gets uploaded per day, right? but they have like AI tags on things like, oh, this isn't a real picture. This was like AI generated, or this was made with AI or whatever. But that's not really solving the problem, you know, it's just pointing it out. So you're like, okay, cool, I won't interact with this. But by the time you've seen it, you've already kind of interacted with it. The environmental impact of AI generation is terrible. It uses a lot of water, it uses a lot of stuff like that. It's not sustainable for the environment whatsoever. So hopefully there's a way to kind of corral it, because it's absolutely ridiculous. And again, like, it's doing just horrific stuff. Like, look at what the thing on like X is doing, right? Like the AI feature they have there called like Grok, it's been like creating like child pornography and like just a bunch of really bad shit. And they're like, yep, that's what it did. It's like, no, this is a problem. Why do you not see this is a problem, right? So I don't know. I think, yeah, just something needs to be
But
done to stop it.
even if you regulate it, creeps are still going to use it, and like Russia and China
Yeah.
aren't going to regulate it as do America, you know.
Well,
So
yeah, like that's the other thing. Like, you kind of have to have sort of like some sort of global kind of meeting. That's
yeah,
not,
but
yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, that's
China's
not
not
going to
going to do
happen.
that. Yeah, well, so anyway,
Like,
I mean,
no one's going to agree to it, but.
I wish I had the answer. I don't. It's scary times, man. I don't want to be too panicky, but I think AI really might fundamentally change our existence as a whole. I hope it doesn't, but I saw Terminator 2, man, and it ain't looking good. So yeah, it sucks, man. I hate AI. Here's something that is cool though. Surfboard, they got a new video out and they got a new album coming out. I think this is the second single from the upcoming Surfboard album, or maybe it's the third one. The new single is called, is it the new single is called Je
Jessica.
Jessica's Changed. And that's off the new album, which I have already pre-ordered. Reality Star out March 6th, which really is not that far away. Ew. On Judo Records. The song is kind of one of these mid-tempo surfboard ones, and I would say it's got a very heavy Nirvana influence. And the singer Danny Miller even references Nirvana in the song. Commenters, except aside from me, universally hated this. I am.
Yes.
At 1 out of 10, what do you think I gave this? M.
10 out of 10.
Not 10 out of 10. I'm saying 8 or 9 out of 10. I think the song is exceptionally good. I think every surfboard song of recent era is exceptionally good. And it's cool. I mean, it's cool to love a band and then they keep putting out great stuff. A lot of times, maybe you'll get into a band, but you get into them after their classic era or whatever. Or you get into like a buzz band and like the second record isn't a follow. I mean, this is their second record, but you get into like a buzz band and the second record doesn't meet the expectation of the first. It's so much fun to be a fan of a band and they keep putting out like amazing stuff. I thought this track was great. Commenters, and I always hate to reference commenters too much, but someone said trash band, someone said surfboard, and then someone said surfboard, they said. And someone says, weird is not always art, and art doesn't always have to be weird. And either one together doesn't necessarily mean good. First of all, I think this song is great. I think the video is funny and good. But M, none of this is that weird. I mean, it's not that
No.
weird. Like, Psychic TV is weird, and even Psychic TV isn't that weird. Like, and so this kind of, if you recall, M, it was last week or the week before where I was talking about Punk News Top 20s. And I was
Yes.
genuinely surprised that people didn't think my list had punk in it. Not that I care that people think my picks are punk or not, but I thought what I was putting in my list was considered punk by almost everybody, you know?
Sure.
And
Yeah.
so, and then with this video, they're like, well, this is weird and not good. This video is not, the song is basically a Nirvana song, which I think is, I mean, I'm not a big Nirvana fan really, but I think this song is great. I mean, the song is pretty much Nirvana inspired for sure. You know, the video is just kind of one of these modern kind of funny videos. It's got Danny Miller and a person in a chicken costume, kind of just singing the song and looking interesting, you know. And so when people are like, this is weird and in a bad way, I'm like, if you think this is weird, then I don't think you know anything about punk rock at all. You know, like
No.
what would you think of Throbbing Gristle? What would you think of even X-Ray Specs with with polystyrene in the trash bag. What would you think of? I'm trying to think of some other bags that are weird, but not even really that weird, you know? What would you
The
think of
bags.
Flipper? Who?
The bags.
Bags, you know? The bag. What would you think of Black Rain and the Metro Squad? Those bands are weird, but they're far from the weirdest, you know? So it kind of goes back to, and this is what I was kind of bitching about. I'm tying a lot of things together, but I was bitching about that thing 23 Punk, where they'll just put NOFX. Here's a picture of them, and people go crazy for it. I feel as though maybe now, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe now the punk has devolved back into a very safe zone, a very comforting and familiar zone, you know, and punk is seen as only this very narrow thing, you know. And I think it is. There's what I'll say the Fat Records crowd, and there's the Maximum Rock and Roll crowd. But the Maximum Rock and Roll crowd, their perspective of punk is very narrow as well. You know, there's so much between the Maximum Rock and Roll crowd and the Fat Wreck crowd. There's so much other punk that isn't even that weird. And so, what it says to me, and I'm going to pat myself on the back, is if people think this is weird, then it says to me that I understand punk at a way higher level than they do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
So it kind of freaked me out that, hey, it freaked me out that this got that much hate. I think it's great. And it
Yeah,
freaked
it
me out even
is.
more that people saw this as weird. It's not that weird.
No, we've definitely run weirder stuff. Like, much weirder stuff. Probably in the past, like, week. Like, it's
So,
supposed to be, punk's supposed to be, like, challenging. That's part of the fun of it. Like, you want to see what's going on. You want to like hear, like see a cool visual, hear something you've never heard before.
that goes back to the question: is do they actually think this is weird, or are they just attacking surfboard because there's been a bias against surfboard since they came around the first time?
I think they're just attacking surfboard because there's been a bias against surfboard since the beginning. I don't know if any of them have actually listened to the song or watched the video or engaged with it other than just seeing the name of the band, and that's it, you know?
Do you think they're attacking surfboard because Danny Miller doesn't fit into, I would say, a stereotypical view of what Fat Wreck fans think a female vocalist should be like?
That's interesting.
Or what, why does surfboard garner such ire from certain groups of people? Maybe that's a better question.
I think it's just like people who see something that's maybe like a little different from what they're used to and they don't want to engage with it. You know, like I think they see surfboard and they see Danny Miller and they see like, you know, like somebody who's younger and is doing something really interesting and cool and, you know, might have like really cool like eye makeup or might be like dressed very like differently or something and are just like see it as a threat or something. Like I think that's part of it. I think there's definitely a healthy dose of misogyny. I think there's a lot of just ways of thinking that don't serve anyone anymore, you know, and people are stuck in that. And I think that's mostly what it is.
I think that if you took Danny Miller out and threw a guy in and made everything else exact same, certain people would like it that claim to hate surfboard.
Well, like it's just so stupid, right? Like we've seen this happen time and time again, like on the site where there's a band that's doing something really, 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 really cool, and they might be made up of women or non-binary people or like trans people, and then people don't give it a shake and they just attack it, but we keep covering it, and then people come around because they actually start listening to it. So I really hope that's what's going to happen with Surfport because they are a really, really cool band. They sound great. I think anyone who's complaining about it, especially like this song, Jessica's Changed, if they went and listened to it, I think they'd really enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, would you agree that it's basically Nirvana?
It's very heavily influenced, yeah. It sounds
What
really good though. I like Nirvana.
would you think of the song?
I enjoyed the song. I like it's nice and grungy. I really like the chorus. And I thought the video was a lot of fun with like the chicken, the person in the chicken suit, and they're, running around and dancing and kind of like at one point I think they tried to eat chicken wings and stuff. It's just fun and great. And again, like Dani Miller just kicks ass, right? Like, her lines, like, fuck you, I'm hot, and that song, and then in this, or in the song of the same name or solo song, and then in this one, just like, I'm a hot bitch and stuff like that. And it's like, Dani Miller's cool. She should just keep being herself,
You're right. Dani Miller is queen of the lines, in that she might be like the best line writer in punk right now. I forget the exact thing, but she's like, she used to be my friend, but Jessica's changed, and I'm falling in love with the ghost of Kurt Cobain. And I don't know what any of that actually means, but I love there's a meaning there, and I don't know the meaning, and I really enjoy trying to figure out what the meaning is, you know. Dani Miller really is the greatest, and she definitely is exactly what I want out of punk in 2026. Definitely one of the best punk artists, modern punk artists around. I hope they go on tour. Everything I've heard from this album so far has been great. I'm psyched on this record. I think it's going to be cool. And let's talk about King of the Lines, or to quote Elvis Costello, Morrissey is great with coming up with titles. It's too bad he forgets to write the rest of the song. And that's Elvis. That's a paraphrase. I'm going to see if I can pull up the actual quote right now. So anyway, Morrissey has announced his new record. Oh, here we go. He writes wonderful song titles, but sadly he forgets to write the song. Which I actually disagree with. We'll talk about this after the show. Anyway, I just something popped out of my email. So anyways, I disagree with Elvis Costello, and then I think Morrissey is a fantastic songwriter. Though not all his songs are fantastic, he's got some really bad songs, but he's got some absolutely amazing songs. And what I really like about Morrissey is he's not scared to deviate from quote traditional song structure. He's not scared to do something really weird in a song, and he's not scared to do bizarre things. Like one of the best songs is "Panic," where the last line is "Hang the DJ," and instead of finishing the song, he just keeps saying "Hang the DJ," which I think is clever and weird and awesome, you know. So he's got a new album coming out. The new album is called "Makeup Is a Lie," which, after further digging, "Makeup Is a Lie" appears to be a reworked version of the second of the two unreleased Morrissey albums. The first unreleased Morrissey album is "Bonfire of Teenagers," which still appears to be unreleased. The second was going to be "You're Right, It's Time." "Makeup Is a Lie" appears to be the reworked version of that album. So that's coming out very soon, March 6th. Via Sire Warner. Morrissey's back on Sire Warner, which we talked about last time, but he released the lead single, "Makeup Is a Lie." And what do you think John gave to this track?
I think you gave it a six.
Dead on. I'll tell you why.
Okay. Yes,
Six out of
why?
10, 6 out of 10 for me. I think the title is interesting, "Makeup Is a Lie." I think maybe it's a little too, I don't think I would have led with that kind of a title. I think it's a little too abstract. I think the lead single should have been something punchier, you know. But that being said, I think it's an interesting concept, and I think the way he sings is interesting. "Makeup Is a Lie," but where this track, and I think the song, the melody is pretty good. You know, it's kind of modern Morrissey following his last album, "I'm Not a Dog on a Chain," which was fantastic. This one, the chorus, he goes, "Makeup is a lie," and then he just goes, "Makeup is a lie, makeup is a lie, makeup is a lie, and makeup is a lie," and he does it all throughout the song. And for me, it feels a little lazy and kind of boring. That sentence in of itself isn't that interesting, you know. I think what he should have done is worked on the song for 3 more days and come up with an interesting response line to "Makeup Is a Lie," you know, like "Makeup is a lie, no matter how you try, it can't hide your cries, and that's why makeup is a lie." Like, I think he should have put words instead of just saying the sentence, instead of just saying the title over and over and over. That feels kind of boring to me. And that was my, I mean, his voice sounds good. The song itself sounds good. I think this song could use a little bit more work. And in true Morrissey fashion, where he makes bizarre choices, and I can't tell if him making bizarre choices is tactical or just his instinct. I forgot where I'm going with that sentence. I can't tell if he releases a lead single to be puzzling yet again,
Oh.
or he a great song and it's just not that great of a song, which doesn't bode well for the rest of the album if your lead single is not that good. But that being said, sometimes bands release a lead single and you're like, this is not that good. And then you hear the album and the rest of the album is so much better. And then the lead single goes back and actually fits in and makes more sense. You know what I mean? One of my favorite examples of that, too bad Nicki Minaj is totally wacky now because I was a huge fan. But on her greatest album, which is the second one, and you know the whole thing about Nicki Minaj and that she's totally wacky now?
She did. She said the COVID vaccine like blew up her cousin or her best friend's cousin's
Oh, no,
balls or
she's,
something.
I don't even care about that. I'm talking even way wackier than that. She's like full on Trump now and everything. It's like, come on, man, you're Nicki Minaj. Come on. You know, anyways, her album, is it Pink Friday Roman Reloaded? She's got a song called Stupid Ho. And the second half of the entire song is just her, you're a stupid hoe. You're a stupid hoe. You're a stupid hoe. And online that got like sad, but this is what you call rap now. But the first half of the song is her doing incredibly complex and fast raps and rhymes. So the second half is kind of like, I've done everything super complex now. Now I'm just going to hit you with a baseball bat. So in that context, hearing that song in the context of the album makes a big difference just hearing it by itself, you see. And so here, this song in of itself, M, I didn't think it was a great single. Maybe in the context of an album, it'll be stronger, but I'm going to guess it's not really going to happen. What'd you think of this song, Em?
Oh, I thought it was so boring.
Yeah, kind of boring.
Yeah, like it's really minimalist, which is cool. People can do lots of neat things with minimalist stuff, but like, I don't know, it's just kind of drones on and it's not that long, but it feels like it's really long. It's also like sandwiched between You're Right, It's Time and Notre Dame. So it's like it's a second track on the album.
Well,
So
you make a good point. And like,
how is that?
what if it was real? Like, what if it really was a truly minimalist song? Like, what if the song in of itself was like one thing over and over, and it was actually kind of boring? In that context, that actually could be a really effective piece in the middle of an album or the end of an album, you know? But for me, it's not even that strong. And that like it's not full on drone. It's not full on minimalist. It's
Oh
just kind of
no.
a lazy chorus, you know. And I don't really take pleasure in beating up. I know people love to beat up Morrissey. I never like throwing stones at anybody. But I'm not a resolute Morrissey defender either. I mean, he's done whack stuff, you know, and he's weird, which I like. And so I'm just giving my honest opinion here. I think it's a weird choice for a lead single. I think it's not that strong.
No, not at all. It's really boring. It's also like he says, like Paris is such a theme in the song, and the whole album was recorded in France, and it's just like, we get it, you've gone to France. You know?
Well, there might be some under. Well, I actually don't disagree. I would disagree with that. And that Morrissey saluting France, I think. I mean, he's done that before. He's got that song, "I'm Wrapping My Arms Around Paris." But after the Paris, the Bataclan attacks by terrorists, Morrissey made some statements, and I think there might be a commentary buried within there. You know, so.
Oh, interesting. I did not know that he made statements after that.
So. And actually, that might be one of the reasons why he got in a big fight with Capitol, is I think he wanted to release a stronger statement with regards to that. Although no one knows, in true Morrissey fashion, no one knows what the exact statement actually is or the message is. And he's like, well, you don't know what it is because I haven't said it. It's like, well, all right, then what is it? I'm not telling. You know, it's like, you know, like, so, but you know, Morrissey famously is a big fan of France. And you know, early Smiths and early Morrissey dealt heavily with English stuff. Then he's got some albums and songs that focus heavily on Italy, and then he's saluting Paris, which Paris is a great city, France is a great country, and they should be saluted. But I'm not exactly sure what the message is there. But M, the question is this Morrissey being tactically weird and challenging, which I like. I like that Morrissey's a quote pop singer that doesn't always give the audience what they want and can be challenging. So is this him being challenging, or is this just a misfire?
I think this is him trying to be challenging, but it falls flat.
Ah, I agree. I agree. I agree.
I think the album cover is hilarious, though.
In a good way or a bad way?
Jury's out on that.
So what I'm saying is, do you feel as though he's trying to be funny and is being funny in the level he wants to be funny, or you think he's like Glenn Danzig's movies, they were funny, but they weren't supposed to be that funny, you know?
I think this is supposed to be funny.
Yeah, see, that's this one of the reasons why I like Morrissey is as serious and somber as he's often portrayed, he's actually a pretty wacky, funny, frankly bizarre guy. So I like this as him like being kind of, and you can read it as him running away from the church, which is like a common theme in Morrissey because it's him like screaming or laughing or something. And I like that it's ambiguous. And there's a cross floating in the sky behind him, which I think is interesting. I think it's one of his better covers, frankly. I think it's pretty clever. And should we use this as our new? So at Punk News for years, we've been using the Morrissey Swords cover as our photo because it looks like he's taking a shit in the woods. And should we make this one our new cover photo with him kind of like running away, freaked out? I think it's time for the update. I like the shitting
I
in the
think it's
woods
time for
one.
the
Anyway,
They're both just great.
I think Morrissey is a fascinating artist. He's done some bullshit stuff. He's done some really cool stuff. I think his single is not that great. What's a little frustrating to me is, like I said, is Bonfire Teenagers is still in the vault, and the lead single from that, Rebels Without a Pause, might be one of the five best songs he's ever written. So it is frustrating that we're getting this instead of the true creme de la creme that we know exists, you know. So anyways, well, we'll see. And 1 out of 10, will John buy the album?
8.
10. Of course I'm gonna buy the album. It's Morrissey. Even if I knew it was bad, at this point I gotta buy it. Here's one more on the M side of things. M, tell us about the new Fishbone 40th anniversary.
So pardon?
The Fishbones. And I saw not Anton. What's the singer's name, M?
Angelo.
Angelo. I saw him at Punk Rock Boing this past summer.
Was he cool? Did you say hi?
I did. I did say hi, and he was very cool. And Angelo is he's a fascinating guy in that he's as animated off stage as he is on stage. Like that's not a character. That's who he is, you know.
Last year when I talked with him and Chris Dowd, and just incredible energy, honestly, just so cool. Very nice folks. So Fishbone, they're going to be reissuing their 1986 debut album In Your Face. For its 40th anniversary. So the reissue has new liner notes that were written by Nabil Ayers. And it has a copy of the album along with a tribute cover album titled Cover Your Face, which will feature bands covering songs off the album. The track listing for that has not been released yet, so we don't know who's on it. We don't know who's going to be covering what song or whatever. But that'll be released kind of soon. They also announced that they're really or they're working on another new album. So that'll be interesting to see what that's all about too. But I really like when bands do reissues and have other stuff with it, because it's like, yes, we know the album is really good, we enjoy the album, but to have like the new liner notes and to have like a tribute cover album, like I think that stuff's just so fun and really puts the album, like gives it not like kind of context, but also like a new context and kind of different stories. I really like when bands do like kind of the tribute albums because it's really cool to see how the bands who have been influenced by them look at the songs and translate the songs, like with the Refused covers album, how those bands took the Refused songs and kind of made them their own, and you could really hear like the impact they had on their bands. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what it'll be for Fishbone, and I want to know who's going to be on it. I think there's definitely going to be like lots of like younger ska bands, but who knows, who can say. So that's the Fishbone reissue, and it looks really cool. One is just like black vinyl, and the other one looks like it's a swirl, and it looks really, really neat. John, what do you make of it?
Why do you think they're keeping the tribute artist secret? To me, that suggests that the tribute artists aren't that interesting. Because if it was, say, like Paul McCartney or like, I don't know, Amy on the Sniffers, you'd think they'd want people to know about that.
I think it's because that's still like in process,
Oh.
because Yeah, it's like we've gotten most of the tracks back. We're waiting on like maybe two or three. I think that's what it says on the pre-order website.
Well, I think it's cool they've got the rights to the record back. I'm surprised they're only doing a
Yeah.
thousand copies. You think Fishbone could blow out a thousand copies easily? But on the other hand, Fishbone, as heralded as they are, their management decisions haven't always been the best. But that being said, I love deluxe reissue. I actually just got the deluxe reissue of They Might Be Giants' John Henry record. So I'm always up for a good reissue. And it is nice, Em, that we do live in the age of reissues right now. I know records are maybe a little too expensive these days, $35, $40, $45 for a record. Kind of BS. But as to the material we're getting, Em, we are getting just primo material after primo material.
Yeah, and like it seems like more people and more bands are putting a lot more effort into it,
True.
which is really nice to see. Or maybe it's like they're allowed to put effort into it. I don't know. Like, you know, maybe
Nabil
it's.
Ayers is president of Beggars Group?
Sorry?
It says that Nabil Ayers is president of Beggars Group. Do they mean beggars from the UK? Beggars Group?
I was not aware. I just know that Nabil Ayers is an author.
Yeah, I mean he's a pretty well-known music journalist. I think he's a music journalist, right?
He is
Maybe it's
an author, musician, podcast host, and music industry entrepreneur. Oh yeah, he is Beggars Group.
He is. Oh, maybe he did he form? No, he took the role in 2022.
President of Beggars Group US, where he has run campaigns for The National, Big Thief, Future Islands, and Saint Vincent.
Oh, he's to me. Oh, I thought he was an author. I mean,
He
it looks
is.
like he's really more of a music executive guy.
He has written My Life in the Sunshine, Searching for My Father and Discovering My Family.
I never heard of that. But I mean, really, he founded the Control Group and he put out like Licky Lee Records. So it looks like he's more of a music executive. Oh, no,
You
actually, but
think?
he's contributed to the New York Times, Pitchfork, and Rolling Stone. So I
Yeah.
guess he does both. Well, there you have it. Em, tell us about Cootie Catcher.
Yeah. Cootie Catcher are from Toronto. They do kind of like indie rock, power pop kind of stuff. And they released their debut album, Shy at First, last year. So now they're getting ready to release their second album called Something We All Got. That's out February 27th. And they released a video for their second single from the record called Puzzle Pop. So it's really bright and colorful and like hand drawn and hand animated. So there's like a dog in there, there's a band in there, there's some cars, and the more you watch it, like the more kind of like surreal it gets. Like the cars are going around like a bottle in the fridge at one point. There's like a pencil that's like drawing stairs and drawing faces. So you see the line kind of form the shape, which is really, really, really cool. And I think the visuals match the song really well because the song's very bright and like kind of like incorporates a lot of different things. Like there's whistles, there's like a really fun kind of gang vocal chorus and all sorts of stuff. And then kind of by the end, there's a lot of kind of not distortion, kind of cut and paste kind of feel. So it's really fun. It's a really interesting listen. The visuals fit it super well. And I'm excited to hear the full album because the first single they released is slightly different. So I want to know how they're all going to like mesh together. And yeah, I like it's so nice to see bands put like marry the visuals with the song. Oh, and the video was created by Corinne James, who also makes music under the name Naomi Alligator. So that's a little tie-in too. John, what do you make a cootie catcher? Are you a fan?
I didn't know that what a cootie catcher was. I mean, a cootie catcher, the listeners don't know, in like elementary school, like you'll make those fortune
Yeah.
teller things that are like four pyramids that you like fold back and forth. I didn't know that was called a cootie catcher. Is that like a Canadian thing?
I thought that was just kind of an everywhere thing.
I've never heard that phrase ever till just now.
But yeah, that's what it is. You get to pick a number, get your fortune.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I thought this was cool. I thought it sounded good. It sounded kind of like indie pop twee. It reminded me a lot of like those kinds of like kind of like really pitchfork bands from like 2005, or Stereo Gum bands, or even Hipster Runoff bands from 2005. I thought it was cool. I liked the video, and it sounded pretty interesting to me. And why is this a band? So this is a new band. Why, like, how do you know about this band, and why is this a band that people should care about?
How do I know? I
Like, are you a
got
fan of this band? Is that why you're covering them?
Yes, I enjoy this band. Yeah, it was, I think I saw something. They were covered in Exclaim. So I write about them there, and that led me to checking them out. And then everything just kind of rolled from there on, kind of thing. It was like, oh, cool. They have, they just signed a car park and they have a video out. Like, cool. I'll write about that for Punk News. And oh, they announced their album and that's cool. And they're playing, what is it? Oh, Tavern Tour. So it was just a cool thing where I found out about them and then they started releasing more stuff. So I like this band. I think this band are really fun and really interesting to listen to. I like when there's a lot of stuff going on. And it's a little lighter than what I usually listen to. So it's a nice kind, it's nice in that way too. Nice to have a balance.
Well, they have the same kind of like an interesting new band to me. And I realize I was going to talk about this earlier, but They Might Be Giants have just re-released a deluxe edition of John Henry. This is significant because I think John Henry is the only They Might Be Giants record that's really hard to find on vinyl. And actually, the first time around, it wasn't even put on vinyl. It wasn't put on vinyl until like 2009 or something when Asbestos Records put it out
Oh.
on vinyl. And even then, now it's like, it's that under that, it's like $150, $200 record. So the new one is out now. I got a copy, and the first three sides of the record, and the fourth side is some live recordings. And what do you think this record cost? Oh, it comes with a digital download.
$65.
50 bucks, a little expensive, I think.
Okay.
For a double record, 50 bucks, a little high, a little high.
Yeah, a little steep.
That being said, I have it. It sounds good. I'm not even a huge They Might Be Giants fan, but I'm probably a bigger fan than I like to admit. I like this record a lot. If you want this record on vinyl, you should get this copy because there's only 1,000 of them, I think. And it's gonna this will sell out, and this will shoot up in price fairly quickly. I note that it's oh yeah, it's hand numbered. How do you like that, Em? I've been
Hey,
number 785.
congrats.
This is put out between Elektra and Idlewild. Idlewild is the They Might Be Giants band's label. And so unless they've got some kind of unusual agreement, this is probably for a limited pressing with Elektra, because labels like Elektra don't like to do kind of unlimited license pressings. So I would
Oh.
expect that this is going to shoot way up in price as soon as it sells out, which is going to be this week or next week, if it's not sold out already. So if you want a copy, now is the time to buy a copy, even at 50 bucks, Em.
Why was it out of print for so long?
It was out of print because it was on Elektra Records, a major label. And so I guess I don't know if They Might Be Giants ever reached out to Elektra or not, but it really, for Elektra, it didn't pay to put it out on vinyl because it came out in the mid 90s. No one was buying vinyl then. And then
Oh.
when the time vinyl popped off again, say 2015 or so, 2012, Elektra had more important things on their plate than repressing. Even though to They Might Be Giants fans, this record's a big deal, to Elektra, it's not a big deal at all, you know? So in 2009, Asbestos Records, which a lot of people have conflicting opinions of that label, they actually put out some pretty cool records. They put out the Dead Milkmen Big Lizard record, which that version until recently was a $200 record. I don't know what it is now because Dead Milkmen just re-released that. So the point being is Asbestos was able to license a bunch of major label records and put out vinyl versions. They did the John Henry record, sold out immediately, but then Asbestos presumably didn't have a license to repress it. So that's why it's so expensive. So until just this past week,
Oh,
the
okay.
only pressing ever was a very limited 2009 Asbestos record pressing, which didn't even have good distribution. So this is really only the second ever pressing. And I bet it's going to be limited pressing. And I bet it's going to shoot way back up again real soon. That's why.
Okay, that makes sense.
And do you like They Might Be Giants? Do you not care? Where do you stand on They Might Be Giants?
I know one They Might Be Giants song, and it is in Istanbul, not Constantinople. And I think that song is fun. I have not checked them out, not for any reason, I just haven't. Where would you start with They Might Be Giants?
You don't even know the Malcolm in the Middle song, You're Not the Boss of Me Now.
No.
You
Wait,
don't know the
is that the opening music?
Yeah, you're not the boss of me now. You're not the boss of me now. You're not the boss of me
Oh.
now. And life
Okay.
is unfair. And that's the song. So anyways, so you know, I might have heard this articulated before, but I heard this rearticulated 2 or 3 weeks ago. Someone said there's two types of music fans: Ween fans, and They Might Be Giant fans. And we were talking about Ween, and I'm definitely more in
Yes.
the Ween camp. Ween camp is two dudes that did, not now, but did a lot of drugs, have a lot of hatred and whimsy in their songs, but there certainly is a revelry in the nihilism of the world in Ween, okay?
Sure.
By contrast, They Might Be Giants, you could say, is the light side of that. Two guys, they're weird, but they're very nerdy. And none, well, actually, aside from the first record and even the second record, as they progressed, they got cutesier and cutesier and wootsier, much to my chagrin, you see. And so I actually went and saw them a while ago now, maybe 8 years ago, 10 years ago, probably eight years ago. And they're like, we're doing two sets. I'm like, oh, that'll be a great first show. And they really just did one set, and they just talked a lot between every song, and then took a break and came back, you know.
Oh.
But what was annoying, like, I'm not trying to be a dick and I'm not trying to be a bully, but it was, and by far, the nerdiest crowd I'd ever seen, you know? And
Ooh,
not that that's a
okay.
bad thing, but it was like really nerdy, and it was nerdy and self-aware nerdy, you know, kind of like that terrible show, The Big Bang Theory, you know? I
Oh,
felt like I was in that,
sure.
you know? And they would say something on stage that was mildly amusing, and it was like a line, you know, a pre-written line, but it wasn't that funny. And everyone would go, hee-hee-hee-hee-hee-hee-hee-hee-hee. And I'm like, oh, like, I wish I was at Ween where people were doing cocaine in the bathroom and shit. You know what I mean? So I did have a bad They Might Be Giants live show experience. Like, it came across as very,
Sure.
very nerdy to me. And not that nerdy's bad, because nerdy's not bad.
Nerdy's
Nerdy,
great.
but nerdy, but without any sense of danger or daring or balls. That was my take, you see. Too cutesy wootsy.
Interesting.
Too cutesy wootsy is really the best way for me to phrase it up. Too cutesy wootsy and too pleased with itself, you know. But that being said, I actually am a pretty big They Might Be Giants fan. And not that long ago, I mean, so they most people kind of divide They Might Be Giants into maybe either two or three eras.
Okay.
If you divide it into three eras, there's the era where there's really only two guys, and then there's the era where they become a full band, which is John Henry, and then after there's the post-major label era. So that's probably the three eras of They Might Be Giants.
Okay.
And until recently, I avoided everything after John Henry, but then, or yeah, everything after John Henry. But then, actually, just out of the blue, I actually bought almost every They Might Be Giants post John Henry record on vinyl because I got them super cheap and I was going to resell them. And I'm like, I'll just play a couple before I sell them. And frankly, I found them all to be at least pretty good or really good, even. I was surprised at how much I enjoyed them. So, anyway, to answer your question, Em, very
Nice.
long-winded answer, is my theory They Might Be Giants record is the first one, because
Okay.
it's called They Might Be Giants, and it's the one that's closest to Ween, where there's some really like dark and kind of evil songs. There's a song called Put Your Hand Inside the Puppet Head, which I don't even know what that's about, but it doesn't sound good. You know, there's a song called She Was a Hotel
Sure.
Detective that's kind of like paranoid. You know, there's a song called Alienation Is for the Rich, which is kind of like a class warfare type song. And
Okay.
there's a really messed up song called Toddler Highway that's kind of like the Ween song Spinal Meningitis, which I actually hate because it's too messed up.
Oh
Or Don't
no.
Let's Start, which is like about fighting. And then their next record is really good, Lincoln. Next record is really good, Flood. Then Apollo 18, and then John Henry. And with each record, they get a little cutesier, a little more quote nerdy, or self-aware nerdy, and less dangerous. And so that gets annoying to me because I like the danger. I like the weirdness. I like the hatred in the song. That being said, and my favorite record is the first one, but the one that are probably the two most bangers that everyone can enjoy, they love, is either Flood. Flood, that's the answer. I would say John Henry, but it's
Blood.
Flood because Flood has their
Okay.
biggest hit, which is Birdhouse in Your Soul, which is a great song. So that's the answer, Em. The answer is Flood. My favorite one is the first, but Flood is a great record. And frankly, as I learned recently, they're all pretty good records.
I will definitely give them a shot.
And that's John's uneducated treatise on They Might Be Giants. Because the fact of the matter is, I actually don't know that much about They Might Be Giants, but I do like them. And I would go see them alive again. But I think I would be annoyed again because they're so pleased with themselves at how nerdy they are, and that annoys me. And I'm like, you know what, man? Ween's up there. They're fighting with each other. They're doing drugs. They've got songs about, shooting your own brother and then blaming it on somebody else. They've got songs about doing cocaine in the cabana because you've been abandoned there. They've got songs about creepy creatures that live under the ocean. That's what I'm here for. But I don't know. Maybe the Ween versus They Might Be Giants battle isn't even fair. And I don't. And why do I feel so compelled to beat up They Might Be Giants? Because I like them. I like They Might Be Giants. But I always have to take shots at them. Why?
Is it because of like the nerdiness? Is there
Yes,
something
that is
that's
it.
just like eh?
Here's what
But
it is.
like,
I'm a nerdy guy, Em. Here's what it is.
yeah.
Here's the exact answer. I'm a nerdy guy, right? I'm not the
Sure.
Fonz. I'm not, But when I go to They Might, but I try my best to be, let's see, what's the word I'm looking for? I try my best to, let me think. I try my best not to relegate myself to the world of the nerds and nowhere else, you see. And I try to be this in multiple fields, the hardcore field, the punk field, the lawyer field, where They
Okay.
Might Be Giants, it's like we're all nerds here. Let's just enjoy being nerds and not try to be anything more than nerds. Nerd, here's what is nerd in the They Might Be Giants world, being a nerd is our identity. But the fact of the matter is, I think a lot of them aren't actually like, well, I think nerd implies some sort of scientific achievement, and I feel most of them aren't really scientists. I don't know if that's a true correlation though.
I think a good test is like, can you run Linux?
Well, there you go. I bet most of them could not. I can.
No.
I feel as though
I
many
can, but
people.
I forgot.
Well, there you go. Then you're a nerd. So I can get that They Might Be Giants world is perhaps a safety haven for those people, But I am scared of being trapped in that world and don't ever want to be trapped in that world. And that's where my ire towards They Might Be Giants comes from. You know what I mean? Mine is
I
like,
think
well,
so.
can't you try to be dangerous? Can't you try to venture into the world of psychic TV? Can't you listen to Death in June and not tell anybody about it? So that's where I'm coming from, man. And also, I felt they were too pleased
Sure.
with themselves. I felt the band was far too pleased with themselves. That was part of it too. But they're a good band. They're a great band.
Would you see them again? Would you try to have a different live experience, or would you think it'd just be the same thing?
No, I actually definitely would go again, but they usually sell out pretty quickly, and I'm usually not that motivated to spend like $80 on the on like. If it was the Rolling Stones, I'd be like, here's my $80, But if They Might Be Giants, I'm like, maybe I'll go, maybe I'll go. And then it sold out. I'm like, guess I'm not going this time. You know what I mean? So
Really that expensive?
well, actually it is, it actually is that expensive. It's like maybe it's like 50 or 60, but then it sells out almost immediately because they're at that level where they can sell out like 2,000 or 1,000 easy, but they can't
Oh,
do
sure.
5,000. So they're at that level where they always sell out every show. But were they to go bigger, it would backfire. You know what I mean?
I see what you're saying,
So
sure.
I think their tickets start at like $60 because they play place in Philadelphia called Union Transfer, and I think that's like $60 starting off. And not that I well, perhaps that's a little high, but you know what? Like every ticket is high now. And guess well, this I'm going way off track. Anyways, so I
Okay.
tickets are too high these days. Let's see here, like. Well, anyway, yeah. So let's not get off track. We got one
More.
more story, and
Okay.
then one more. And oh, is there something else you want to add in?
No,
No.
I want to know what you're going to ask.
Oh, well, I was gonna say Wax. Just out of blue, I was looking at a venue, and Waxahachie is playing. Waxahachie's a huge band now.
Oh yeah,
Huge.
they're massive.
People are paying like $400 for Waxahachie tickets. I'm like,
Holy crap.
Waxahachie? Like, I remember when that was a $12 show band. Like, how did,
Four hundred. Shit.
like they don't play Waxahachie on the radio or anything. Like, how did Waxahachie get so big? They're not even that good.
The internet.
I guess so. We live in a very funny world where there's bands that are on the radio that are way smaller than bands that aren't on the radio. And bands that you think aren't that big are making like millions of dollars a year, you know?
It's nuts. It's so wild.
It is wild.
Anyways.
And then you've got bands that you think are huge that are barely breaking even. You know what I mean? It's weird.
It's you can't tell. There's no way of knowing.
There definitely is a, in the music world though, there definitely is a level where it's tough, and then once you get over that level, life is much, much easier, you know.
Sure.
So anyways, New They Might Be Giants record out tomorrow on Friday, M.
Oh, yes. More giants.
You can buy a They Might Be Giants John Henry sledgehammer. It's a sledgehammer that says They Might Be Giants on it and John Henry on the head of the hammer. And what do you think that costs?
Is it metal?
You
Or
know,
is
in
it
the
like a
picture,
working hammer?
well, I mean, it appears to be a sledgehammer, but I'm not sh oh no, it only weighs 2.5 pounds, so it's like plastic, I guess.
Oh, so it's mini.
Or maybe it's a mini. It's not a real sledgehammer. It's either plastic or it's and like life size or mini and not life size.
$35.
90 bucks.
What? That's ridiculous.
A little ridiculous.
Oof. Oh my God. Okay.
And
That's
actually, here,
terrible.
not to drag, we're dragging this out way too long, but not here. Here's They Might Be Giants commentary on Flood. Long considered the calling card album for the entry into the world of They Might Be Giants, Flood was produced by Clive Langer and Alan Winstanley, and They Might Be Giants and Roger Moodlenut, and features so many audience favorites. We'll just point you to the track list below. So there you go, M. $32, pretty reasonable, I would say. So there we go. I hope I didn't beat up all They Might Be Giants. Actually, and here's one last thing. They're selling tour posters signed for $100, which the fact of the matter
Oh.
is that's what bands charge for signed tour posters now. Misfits,
Okay.
Ween, Danzig, Misfits. I think I may have said Misfits twice.
You did.
Someone else, Morrissey, Patti Smith, signed tour posters, all $100. Posters used to be like a $10 cheapie. Now they call them
Yeah.
prints and they're $100. Is that fair or not fair, Em? What's your stance?
I don't think it's fair unless it's something very special. Like, unless it's like we only, like, the artist only made like 50 copies or something. Like, it's extremely limited. Or this is like only for this show and each show is getting its own poster. And again, kind of limited. Or this one's like hand painted or, you know, something like that. It'd have to be kind of very, very special.
Well, there's a lot of cool They Might Be Giants records for sale on their website. And one thing that is fun about Might Be Giants, and we'll move along, is if you are a They Might Be Giants fan, they're a band that puts out a lot of material, a lot of archive material. So there's always fun stuff to track down and get. So definitely a fun band to collect and dive into deep. Here, let's do this.
Nice.
Should we do this NoFX? Well, we'll do it super quick. And then we'll go one
Sure.
more after this. NoFX is doing an exhibit at the Punk Rock Museum. And it's basically focusing on NoFX, which, you know, of course, Fat Mike is one of the major co-owners of the Punk Museum. So is that weird, Em, or is that not weird? Do fans want it? But also, they posted kind of a teaser here. There will also be a special performance, but it most certainly won't be with all four members playing NoFX songs. F no. So, Em, is this going to be a NoFX reunion, or are they being cute and it's not going to be a NoFX reunion? It's going to be something else because they're literally saying it won't be a NoFX reunion. So you're like, oh, it's going to be a NoFX reunion, but maybe they're just being like tricky, you know? And would you see this? Do you think it's cool? And do you think there's going to be a NoFX reunion like a year and a half after they broke up?
I think there's definitely going to be a NoFX reunion. I don't think this is a NoFX reunion. But where was it here? There would be a round table with members of NoFX. So I think that would be very interesting. And it says band members and crew. So it doesn't say all band members. It has an
Right.
unspecified number of band members. And that's kind of the same thing with will it be all four? So is it going to be like how many members of NoFX are going to be there? Like, is
Three.
it going to be, pardon?
It's going to be three.
Okay.
It's going to be,
Melvin's
well,
not
I
doing
mean, I know
it.
that, but I think it's obviously going to be Fat Mike. It's going to be El Jefe, and it's going to be, obviously,
Smelly.
you know, who's the guy with dreadlocks?
Melvin.
Smelly. So it'll be Fat Mike, El Jefe, and Smelly.
Because Smelly's mentioned in here.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, like, didn't Melvin just have, like, twins or something?
I don't know, Em. It's weird that you know that. Are you a stalker?
No, I remember seeing something on Instagram.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm actually in LA or wherever. Las Vegas. I'm in Las Vegas.
Well, to be fair, Melvin lives in LA, I think.
Maybe. I'm not sure. I
Well, NoFX
don't know where
famously
they're all scattered.
lived in both LA and San Francisco, but they moved back down to LA. But Fat Mike now lives in Vegas, and that's where the Punk Museum is. But I think the other guys still live in LA.
Oh, fair enough. That makes sense then. Because if all four of them were going to be there, I think that would kind of lead me to be like, oh, they're doing another book somehow. Like they're doing another like hepatitis bathtub sort of thing. But probably not. I think it's interesting that the crew's going to be there, like Kent, Rugly, and Jay. I think that would be a lot of fun to do the tour with them because I think they'd have a lot of stories that would be really interesting and kind of have like a different sort of view of things. So I'd definitely be interested in that. I do think Fat Mike and El Jefe would also have interesting things to say and would have interesting stories, but I would definitely do the crew one first.
As opposed to the NoFX members? Why?
I just think it's something that's not really well. I've watched both like Backstage Passports and stuff, and they're both like really, really interesting. But when the crew are on and they're talking, or like they're kind of the ones that are having the main part of the story happen or whatever. It's really cool because you don't hear from them that often. And I just think they'd have really interesting stories and stuff that maybe like we haven't heard before. Like I think Fat Mike and El Jefe would also be really interesting, but I think they'd have some of the or they'd tell some of the same stories that are in like the book and different things. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? You get to hear it live. But that's why I do the crew, like I'd see their tour first. Go on their tour first. What about you?
Would you pay $100 because it is $100 for a punk rock museum tour?
Oh. Okay. $100 for the crew, I think makes sense because it's three people. So I think it's value for your money. One person, no. Three people, I think that's good.
Well, there you
What do
have
you
it.
think?
What do I think about what?
What are your thoughts on this? Like, would you go on any of the tours? Do you
No, I
think?
mean, I'm not really a huge NoFX fan, so no. But if it was like a band that I loved, I would. Although I actually was at the Flag Roundtable, and I found that to be a little disappointing. It seemed to be low energy, and I felt like
Oh, sure.
instead of focusing on important questions or interesting questions, it was just kind of like hanging out and bullshitting, which wasn't that interesting. Like, you know, how often do you get all five members of Flag in the same room and do an interview? Let's make the most of this. Let's not just be like, so where'd you get your coffee from or whatever, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And you know, I know a certain journalist that they could have hired, or even he would have done it for free to really make that happen. But you know, whatever, man. I mean, we're out there, you know. But that, so I don't think it's going to be all four members of NoFX. I think it's going to be. Although I just had a crazy thought. What if they had like what if they brought like one of the early NoFX members that like everyone forgot about? You know, that'd be interesting, wouldn't it? Probably not going to happen though. It's probably going to
Oh.
be Mike, Smelly, and Hefe. Who's the drummer? Smelly?
Smelly.
Okay,
Oh, I
and
think
Mike.
Smelly's tour would be fun. I would go on Smelly's tour.
So that's what I think it's going to be. So, you know, I think it's cool. If you're an NoFX fan, then go check it out and enjoy it. Here's one last story. This was pretty disappointing. Speaking of Vegas, punk rock bowling is held at a place called the Downtown Las Vegas Event Center. And I thought that was owned by the city, but I was totally wrong, and totally wrong. It's actually owned by, I think they're brothers, two gentlemen, Derek and Greg Stevens, who own the D, the Golden Gate, and Circa Hotels, all of which are right next
Oh.
to each other. So they own like three hotels within like 1,000 yards of each other, which I guess that makes sense. I guess that makes sense, right? I don't know. I don't know. But they also own the
Maybe.
Downtown Las Vegas Event Center. Well, and of course, as listeners probably know, there is no Punk Rock Bowling 2026, and the Punk Rock Bowling crew was a little vague about why that was, and we all had, you know, our basis speculation as to why that was. Well, maybe this is one of the factors. The downtown, oh, and let me describe the Downtown Las Vegas Event Center. The Downtown Las Vegas Event Center is probably the best outdoor festival venue I've ever been to because, A, there's room for two stages, a big stage and a medium stage. So festivals can swap between the two stages simultaneously. So you get a lot of music, but you never actually miss anything. Second, the
Sure.
main stage has a bunch of faux grass, like faux, like it's plastic, but it's grass, you know? And they've got a permanent gigantic, I guess I'll call it a tent or over enclosure or whatever, where, you know, a lot of festivals or cheaper festivals are on like blacktop, and you're out there in the sun, you're on the blacktop for 8, 10 hours. It just isn't fun. It's not fun, you know. Whereas in the Downtown Las
Yeah.
Vegas Event Center, they got the nice grass, you're standing there, the heat doesn't bounce up as much because of that fake grass. Or if you want, if it's really hot, which it does get really hot in Vegas, you can go underneath the giant tent, lay down on the grass or sit down on the grass and relax and kind of chill out for an hour or 2 hours while you're waiting for the next man that you want to see. It really is, or was a very pleasurable outdoor festival type thing. It was by far the best. I mean, when you're punk rock bowling was Atlantic City on the Stone Pony outdoor stage, which is on blacktop, and it was me, Sam, and Chris Barrett, and it was rough, and it was rough. You're out there on the
Oh
blacktop, the heat's
no.
bouncing down on you. It was rough. It was real rough. So by contrast, the Downtown Las Vegas Event Center is totally different. It's comfortable and nice and great, and really makes punk rock bowling the best music festival there is or was. Well, these two geniuses, which actually they're probably pretty smart because I'm sure they're super rich. They own three hotels in Las Vegas. They are converting it to a parking lot. So, this is what annoyed me the most, or actually, no, it annoyed me the second most. They're like, oh, we're not ending as an event center. We're evolving into a parking lot. But we're still going to be an event center. Meanwhile, there's only two events scheduled for the event center in 2026. Last year, there was over 100. And what irks me, Em, is you've never been down there. There's actually
No.
plenty of parking in the on the old strip. Like I say, El Cortez. And so when you go to El Cortez, I mean, I've been to El Cortez a bunch of times. When you go to El Cortez actually has its own parking structure, but when you pull up to check in, you got to park in public parking, you know, so there's like street parking. How many times, Em, do you think I've not been able to get street parking right near El Cortez, which is 2 or 3 blocks away from the Downtown Las Vegas Event Center?
Once.
Zero. There is always street
Oh,
parking.
nice.
There is always street parking in downtown Las Vegas. Always, bizarrely, but always. So there's no need for a parking lot at all. I mean, actually, if you look at the picture, Em, there's the giant Golden Nugget parking lot literally in the picture we have on the website, you know.
Oh,
Um,
yes, I see that.
so so it's not necessary. And the fact of the matter is, like, how many cars can you really fit on that, Em? Compared, like, I'm actually surprised about the finance of this because I would think that renting this venue out for a festival would bring in much, much more money than a daily parking lot. But maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe I'm wrong. But particularly because parking is not hard to find in downtown Las Vegas at all. So anyway, this is disappointing. But what's even more disappointing is if punk rock bowling returns, it's not going to be at the Downtown Las Vegas Event Center. Or if it is, it's not going to be with the nice grass and the tent. It's going to be on a parking lot. So I don't know, Em. I think it's the end of yet. I think it's the end of yet another era of another thing, Em. And I'm pretty bummed out.
It sucks to take away something that is so useful and like such a gathering place and different things and turn it into a parking lot. Like, it doesn't seem like it makes any sense. 'Cause yeah, there's parking structures all around this. There's like, I assume
Actually,
the
I'm looking at the picture. I see two giant parking structures literally right next to it. Not one, two giant parking structures.
Oh, is that thing that looks like a Soviet
So I think we're looking at the same picture. Like
yeah, we are.
on the upper right-hand corner, you can see the Golden Nugget parking structure, right? But then if you go
Yep, I
one
see that
block
one.
up to the that would be to the west. It's kind of like behind the stage. That's another even bigger parking structure.
Oh, I was looking at the wrong thing. Got ya. Okay. Yeah, like that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't seem like this area needs parking. It just seems like it's a bunch of. Are they like four lanes? How big are these roads? Or is it just the way the
Oh,
picture
you're
is?
looking in the lower left-hand corner.
Yeah. Or is that the entrance?
Well, that's the entrance, but and that is a street, but it's usually closed off because the green that you're looking at is actually only the big stage. What is to the left of the picture is where the small stage is. So that road is usually closed off, and it's
Oh, I
another
see.
old festival ground, you see.
Okay, sure. Well, it seems like it's perfectly set up for that. Like perfectly set up for festivals, perfectly set up for any other sort of event. Like if they're holding 100 over 100 per or if they were hosting over 100 per year, like that's doing a really good business. That's certainly doing a hell of a lot better than a parking lot's going to be, like a free or not a free parking lot, but like a paid parking lot. It makes no sense. Like where so if you park here, where are you going to go? Like, are you just
I
gonna go into a hotel? Like, if you have covered parking, why are you not taking the covered parking?
well, I mean, I guess it's for the D, which is right down the street from me, like half a block, you know. But that being said, the D has its own parking structure. But I would say you said it makes no sense. It seems to make no sense to me too. But and, I mean, these guys don't lose money. I mean, these guys own three
Oh.
big hotels in Vegas, right? So it must
Oh,
make sense
yeah.
on some level. Now, maybe it's a tax thing, you know,
Oh,
or
interesting.
maybe they're trying to rezone it to make another hotel there in 5 years. You see, like we're not transferring it from a event ground to a hotel. Oh, we're making it an event ground to parking because we need parking. Oh, we need another hotel now. You see, maybe that's it, you know?
Oh, we need to do something to justify the parking.
Or no, we're changing it to a parking lot, so in 5 years we can turn it into a hotel and rezone it as a hotel.
Oh,
You
got it.
see,
Sorry.
maybe. I mean, I'm
Yeah.
just speculating, but I'm bummed out, man. Because in 2023, Punk Rock Bowling was not in the events ground. It was at like I that's actually one of the reasons I didn't go that year. It was in a parking lot in 2023, and it's like I don't want to be standing in a parking lot all day. It's brutal, man. It's brutal.
Yeah.
And it's just the end of Punk Rock Bowling.
I don't think so. I think punk rock bowling is gonna find a way. I do think that when we were doing our baseless speculation, we obviously didn't know about this, but I think this is like one of the main things that made it so this year's not happening. But I think definitely punk rock bowling is going to come back. I think it's going to be changed a little bit, and I don't know if it's going to be in Vegas anymore.
Where do you think it's going to be?
Where's somewhere that has like clubs in a decent kind of
Well,
range?
they might follow the path now carved out by what is what used to be called Punk and Drublic, Punk in the Park. They might like start
Oh,
doing it.
yeah.
They might start doing it in more obscure places. But that's a bummer, man, because it's you know punk, not I'm not gonna hammer this over and over. But downtown Las Vegas is the perfect spot for punk rock bowling. There's a lot of stuff going on. They got the smaller clubs there. You can go to punk rock bowling, hang out, have fun. You don't have to worry about driving. You don't have to worry about safety. You don't have to worry about, you know, how far is my hotel. You can walk from your hotel to the event and back. And there's other cool stuff in between. You know, it's a whole little city. So it's a bummer, man. It's a bummer, bro. Brah.
Bro.
So anyway, screw you. What's their names here? Screw you, Stevens Brothers. You should be ashamed of yourself.
Hope your parking lot is the hottest parking lot, meaning it just like boils tires.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Screw you guys. Maybe Punk New should start our own punk rock bowling. Maybe we should assume the mantle.
Ooh, that would be a lot of fun. I'd be up for it.
Be like, I'd be up for it too, but it's a lot of money, Em. A lot of money.
If every listener right now gave us $5.
Well, then we got it covered. Sure, do that. I wonder, you would think it'd be fun to throw these kind of huge events. Well, actually, no, I guess it wouldn't
It'd be
be.
stressful.
I mean, I think how stressful my little ringy dink events are, and this is times 100, so,
Multiple stages too, and then club shows on top of everything. Oh, I can't even imagine.
And I'll tell you some story very briefly afterwards. I mean, like bands
Sure.
getting involved in shenanigans and stuff, like, oh my God, so.
Oh, sure. Yeah, everything's flowing.
Yeah, so that's a lot of work, So and well, like I said, it's not that punk rock bongs probably, but it's only $180 them. All that for $180 them. That does seem kind of insane. But now that there's these stupid Coachella ones or whatever, or Golden Voice ones, and Punk in the Park, maybe punk rock bongs is going to become one of these $600 things, as opposed to
Oh, I hope
$180
not.
things. Well, we'll see. I hope not. I hope punk rock bongs comes back stronger and better than ever. I think they got an uphill battle at this point, but we will see. And when will we see them? When will we see the people, the listeners?
The listeners, we will see you next week.